You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
While we are extremely proud of our episodes this month to celebrate Pride and highlight our parents in the LGBTQ+ community, we also know that there is a seismic shift in awareness and action taking place with regard to the Black Lives Matter movement here in our country, fighting for social justice in our world.
The episode you are about to listen to was recorded prior to the Black Lives Matter protests currently taking place. When you listen, please bear this in mind. We pledge our support to our Black brothers and sisters during this time and always. Please visit our Instagram page for resources to help you raise an anti-racist child. Change, for their future begins now. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Kara Cooper.
And I'm Jessica Rush. And this week, we have our first pair of dads talking loud, Cheyenne Jackson and Jason Landau. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. And today we have a really, really special couple with us. First of all, we have Cheyenne Jackson, who has made the super successful but often elusive jump from stage to screen, starring on Broadway in All Shook Up, holla, Xanadu, Finian's Rainbow, to starring on TV in American Horror Story, 30 Rock, Glee, and American Woman, which I loved, by the way. He may be best known to our listeners, though, whom most of whom are parents and don't have a lot of time to watch their own TV, as Hades in The Descendants 3. I know a lot of second graders who are jealous of the fact that I know you.
Of course. And we also have with us his husband, Jason Landau, who is an actor turned entrepreneur who has his own branding and merchandising company called Slant. They design promotional and retail products for some of the largest movie and television studios in the world, you guys. Warner Brothers, Paramount, Sony, Lionsgate, you name it. As well as top name brands, MAC Cosmetics, SpaceX, Ellen DeGeneres Show. They're fierce. I mean, what else do we need to say? And their parents. So,
and
welcome.
Their parents.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Yay.
Kara.
Happy to be here. Oh, my God.
This is a major walk down memory lane for me because Jason and I went to college together at NYU. And then Cheyenne and I obviously did All Shook Up, which also feels like a million years ago. But yep. We're just so thrilled that you guys are here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to be here to reconnect with you. And, you know, when that was 20 years ago and reconnect, like, but who we were, what we all went through, you know, to be with them, to have the kind of love, like when I first connected with you today, like, it's so great to have like an immediate love for somebody you haven't seen for so long and to reconnect. So grateful to be here with you.
Yeah.
Jessica, so great to meet you and having us here to share about parenting. What we're doing right and what we're doing wrong.
And we get to hide from our kids for 1 hour.
Exactly.
That's right. I know. I'm hiding too. My kids are in my backyard with my husband right now and I'm like in the office by myself.
Eric took Elliot to the park. So let's get it.
Let's get into it. So the first question we always ask our guests is to tell us about your kids, because we feel like in our industry, it's just not a question we get asked a lot. Mm-hmm.
It's a great question. You want to go first?
No, you go.
Tell us about you. Oh my gosh. I mean,
I'll start.
I mean, I have wanted to be a dad since as long as I can remember. Growing up in Northern Idaho, very poor, I didn't have a lot, but what I did know, what I wanted for my life was to be a dad. And I didn't know how it was going to be. Once I realized I was gay at about 13, I just thought, how is this going to happen? How is this going to be? And I was the only boy babysitter around. I taught Sunday school. And then when I was a teenager, I worked at a health club, and I ended up, people thought I was a trainer, but I actually ran the childcare department. So it's just innate in me. And I always saw myself as a dad. And then I got into a long-term relationship and a marriage for 13 years with somebody who didn't want to have kids. So I just kind of had given up on the fact of, the dream of being a dad. And then when that ended, then I met Jay, and he was open to being a parent. We just fast-tracked it. It was just something that I don't even remember having like deep, long, serious conversations about it. It was just like we both knew that it was going to be so. So we did it. And we can talk about the specifics and all that, but what are our kids like? Our kids are our lives. They are mirrors of everything that I wish to be and everything that I can't stand about myself. Our Willow and Ethan, they're 3.5. They're expressed and emotional and smart and silly and so sensitive. And it's the hardest thing I've ever done. And it's the best thing I've ever done. I could cry in 1 second.
Yeah.
Talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else to say? They're beautiful.
They are
beautiful. They're beautiful. They're fun. They are challenging.
Yeah.
It's funny. I feel like I'm getting some karma payback. Like, I used to get in trouble a lot. And I would laugh in class. I probably with Kara, we were in dance class together. I'd like to distract and laugh and like cohort, that's just like my thing. And Ethan and Will, they both do it in their own little way, but it's like, they are us. And it's been a very big surprise because I went into parenting. The moment I met Cheyenne, it was like, and we were together. I actually never really thought of being a parent. And then when we became a couple, it was like, that's all I wanted. I was like, it was clear, like, oh my God, I never even thought of having a family. And then it was all I wanted when Cheyenne and I got together. And then having them, I didn't realize the karma.
The karmic aspect.
It feels like there's such a karmic joke that comes along with specific children, they were put here to teach. I mean, I can hear myself saying what I'm saying. And as I'm saying it, it sounds so cliche, like they're here to teach you. And it's like, but I am learning so much. And I'll say this is what I've discovered lately. We'll just jump in. Cheyenne and I have actually started therapy every other Wednesday and couples therapy, parenting therapy with an incredible therapist in Northern California. But I'm like, it doesn't seem like therapy. It seems like class. Like I'm learning how to be a father. Not just from them, but like I'm learning how to be a husband and a father. I'm learning how to father while being a husband. And that is critical to what I've learned is, you guys went on Broadway and we all trained ourselves to be, we knew we had to get trained. There was no just being on Broadway. And for all those people that just get on Broadway, good for you. like Cheyenne. Well, we all struggled in the back row of our dance class. And of course, thank you very much. Anyways, but like as a parent, it's like I realized like I got to stay open to learning. I got to stay open to growing. I got to stay open to seeing ways that I get that don't work because I've never done this before.
Right. Right. And well, and you said, I mean, Cheyenne, we hear from you how you love kids. You always wanted to be a father. You are around children. And so what, how different those two journeys must be in some ways, because Jason, you're, it's, did you grow up around a lot of kids or, and it just wasn't something you wanted, or have you been around children?
Like, you know, my ex relationships were what they were. I just knew, I mean, they're probably not going to hear this podcast, but
unless they're crazy and they're still like following you and wanting to know all the things.
Well, one and of them might be.
Oh no!
But they, I just knew, always knew it wasn't forever in both of those relationships. But with Cheyenne, that was the opposite. It was like I knew it was forever immediately. So then with that, I never thought that having a family was a possibility as an actuality, if you will. So then when that became like, no, we could do that. It then it's like became a, and my father was very sick with Alzheimer's when we first started being together. So the death of my father was like a trigger to continue my family and to have his life continue through my children and, you know.
And what I love seeing with Jason, so Jason had, I'm just marvel at, so what, television and pop culture and Disney movies and all of that kind of stuff, that was my whole life. I just loved all that stuff, loved all of the kids. Jason has never seen any Disney movies.
All right, now.
No, but it's, what I'm getting to is that it's like you are seeing things for the first time with them.
Yeah.
Like I'll have something on and you're like, is this Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty?
I'm
like,
oh my God.
It's that bad.
What is wrong with you? So because of that,
I was watching The Cosby Show, okay?
Which is also, I love The Cosby Show.
The learning curve for him, like he's really, like I had a little head start, I guess, in terms of, you know, I'd already, although you were a teacher, but not a teacher of little kids. So listen, it's we're learning every single day, and he's the best dad, and it's just so fucking hard.
I mean, I just
drop those off here.
Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. I just have to give my hats off to you because your kids are the same age as my youngest, 3 and a half. I think they were born around the same time. I remember messaging on Instagram about it actually with you, Jason. But I cannot imagine two children that age right now. Yeah. I mean, at any age really, but this age that they're at right now, it's a super inquisitive, nonstop motion, nonstop talking. I don't know about you, but my son does not stop talking all day long.
Yeah.
So just the mere fact that you're existing with two kids that age alone, but the fact that you're doing it so consciously and trying to, you're conscious parenting consciously, you're making the effort to do the best you possibly can for them, for yourselves, for each other. Okay. I mean, that is, more parents should be on your lead. It's a huge.
I appreciate that. You know, there's the whole concept of conscious parenting, and you like really ask yourself, it sounds so, you know, cliche to say conscious parenting. Like people don't know what that really means to be conscious, a conscious parent. I don't even know, like I've actually never, I guess to out myself here, I've never studied what is conscious parenting, right? I've never read a book on conscious parenting. I only know the phrase conscious parenting. So I'm, you know what I mean? And like,
but how we do it is we believe in the power of words. And we believe in creating for the kids anything we want for them. Perfect example. We believe that if you tell your kids, you know, say you're meeting a group of people and one of the kids like kind of hides behind your leg and you say, oh, are you shy? You're being shy. You say they're shy. Guess what? They're going to be shy. But you say, you know, you're in the park and, oh, yeah, she doesn't like to go up on the slide. She gets scared. You're saying it and it becomes a thing. We went to Disneyland a while back and the kids were, it was a long time ago, actually. They were only, oh, yes. Yes. And you know, all of our kids are in preschool, and a lot of the other moms warned us. They're like, they're too young. They're too young to go to Disneyland. You're not going to be able to go on anything. You're going to be scared of everything. And I said, I don't believe that to be true. I mean, I think you can create within reason anything for them. And I was like, I was determined for them to go on Pirates of the Caribbean. I know it can be kind of scary and it has the two down parts, but I prepped them. I showed them YouTube videos of what it looks like inside. You know, I give them as much information as possible so they know what to do. And wouldn't you know it, we got there. They were 2 years old and they went on Pirates of the Caribbean and they were scared and they held us and they were so proud. And we kind of used that as the template for so many things. We're creating their lives by the way, words that we use and the actions and the way that we are. So I believe, even though, you know, you've never read a book on conscious parenting, you're doing it because we are conscious of the words we say. We're conscious of the words we say around body image and weight and, you know, all of the things that we put on ourselves about our, we don't pull up our shirts and say like, oh, I'm feeling so fat. It's just, that's the F word in our house. It's just, there's certain.
Which is hard.
It's very hard.
Because, you know, my dad always wanted me, my dad was always like, think before you speak, think before you speak. And it's like, it hit me so hard one day where I realized like, I am now, not just parenting, but like to really think before you speak is consciousness. You know, to actually pay attention to your thinking is consciousness or conscious parenting. You know what I mean? And it takes a muscle.
Yeah.
You have to actually know that you have control over like your thoughts, if you will, and that you have to be careful. You have to be mindful of, you know, from not only the words we speak, but to the foods we eat too. Like, listen, do I want my kids to have sugar all the time? No. But like, then you think like, if you take away all the sugar and all the thing and all the gluten, all of this, but then it's like, okay, then you're creating a little bit of, at least for us, we'll just say for us, we don't want to impose, but we have to be conscious of,
it's like a forbidden fruit. They're gonna want it.
Of course. You demonize it, they're gonna want it more.
Right. And I struggle. Here's where I struggle. I struggle at the dinner table for me. Because when they were babies, you know, like the whole thing is like food, if they're full, they sleep, right? So then you have to try and get a certain amount of ounces in because then they have to sleep. So it's like drilled from the very first day of their life to get the food in so that they sleep. So I'm still, Cheyenne has to, because I cook a lot and my mom lives with us and I cook a lot. And so I'm hustling to get it ready. And then I want them to get food in them, but then they're distracted and they're three. I mean, trying to look at each other, sometimes we're like, they're just three, you know? Three. Yeah. But
and we're working on slowing
me down. And just slow me down.
You know, as we've learned, I mean, the body is an amazing thing. And if they're hungry, they will eat. And if they're sleepy, they'll sleep. And if they're thirsty, it's like, and Jason, you know, definitely.
Yeah, they'll do that after this bite. Okay, good.
No, but it's hard to relinquish that control though, you know?
It is. I think that, you know, that was a struggle for, I don't have to name who it was in our family, but that was a struggle for some older people in our family to recognize with Elliot when she's 5 and a half now, but to recognize that she knows when she's thirsty, she knows when she's done eating, when she's satisfied, she knows what she likes and what she doesn't like. They get to this about 3 and a half is when they really start to be able to consciously, whether they even realize that's what they're doing, but they know.
Right.
If they're thirsty, they're going to ask for something to drink, some water. And if they're, you know,
and as a parent to begin trusting them, because you, for the first 2 years, almost 3 years, they're just these babies and then toddlers. And like, there's no language and there's no communicating really in terms of like, I want what they really want. You're guessing. It's a lot of obviously, you know, figuring it out. And now when they say something either happened in their life, whether it's around food or whatever, but I sometimes have this moment like, wait a minute, they are they were saying the truth about that moment, and they are really hungry, or they are really like, oh, wait a minute, these people, I have to shift now.
Right. Because now they're people. They're really
people. Yeah. And right. I'm not just like, it's not me telling you what to do all the time. And yeah. I have to trust that they are saying what they're saying. They know what they want.
Right. Yeah. Now, we're kind of struggling with the idea of resisting or rejecting the idea of being their bitches. You know, like I love to be of service. My love language is acts of service and doing things. So I actually really love getting them things, getting them their favorite blankets, getting them crackers, getting whatever it is, to a point. And then there comes a place and I make them ask nicely and be good with manners and all the normal stuff. But we definitely, they both can like feed off of each other and become very like prince and princess, like sitting on the couch, like I want blah blah blah, and we're both, you know, that's our latest.
That was our first therapy session we had. We were really dealing with. I realized that I was being their bitch. I mean, and it was so funny. Like,
yes.
Tell the
story.
They were in the bath, and they were in our bath, and you can see from the bath our bed, and then we have this other chair in our bedroom, and I was. Cheyenne usually gives them baths while I clean up the kitchen, and I go to Willow in the bath. She's like, no, I don't, sit over there. And I'm like, okay. So I go sit on the bed. She's like, no, over there. And I like move. And she's like, no, farther. And
I'm
like,
still see you.
I can still see you. So then I'm like, Cheyenne, after like a minute and a half of me moving, you know, I'm here. Oh, over here. Oh, over here. Oh, I'm sorry. It's like, Cheyenne's like, do you realize what you are doing?
Right? Like, there was no irony.
I was literally moving to her command.
To the left. Can you still see me? Like, it wasn't even thinking.
I mean, it was
like you were trying to hit your mark. Yeah. Right? Like, yeah, for like a framing or something.
Talk about being their bitch. I was like, I'm done.
It's good that you've realized that now, because only now, about five or five and a half, have Eric and I started to turn to each other and be like, we have to fix this.
Yeah.
She's an only, and you know, we want to just, you know,
give her everything.
Yeah. And she's a very sweet soul, but there are definitely moments where I'm like, you're sounding a little entitled and a little ungrateful. We got to nip this in the bud.
It's
so interesting. My journey with this specific thing, like being your kid's bitch, is so different because our older child has special needs. She's autistic. And so she does need us to do a lot of things. Like she can't, she's working on it, but like she can't dress herself. We need to help her do that. You know, all those things. And so I'd been so conditioned to be there to help. But then I had this opposite response to my son, where I was like, no, you can do this. You are going to do it. You have the ability to do it. You're going to do it. Wow. And it sometimes comes back to bite me because I need to give him the same level of attention that she gets. And I've come to recognize that now, like if he wants help, I'm going to help him, because that's really just him wanting attention, you know? But my response was so like, no, you are capable. You have the ability. You're going to do this. Yeah. You know, it's fascinating to hear, even though with my daughter, I'm like, whatever you need, I'm there, whatever, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fascinating.
I could only imagine.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting journey.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
You said you were going to go into it, but can we dive into how you went about having
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Absolutely.
Give us the goods. Tell us.
We discussed briefly all of our different options. Adoption for a hot second. For us, we both just had the feeling that surrogacy was going to be a really good match for our family and for what we wanted. So that's what we set our sights on. And we have a lot of friends in this community in Los Angeles, gay couple friends who have kind of all gone to like the same couple of places. And so we thought, oh, we'll go to the places and do the thing. And we went to a couple of surrogacy places, and it wasn't a right fit. It felt corporate and
elitist
and kind of cold. And also, to be frank, there weren't a lot of women around. And already here we are, two gay guys trying to be very mindful that our kids are not going to have moms. And we just kind of wanted like mama energy. We wanted like an office run by women. And so we found this, I don't remember how we found that the boutique.
My friends, Ian
and Sam. Oh yeah. Some other friends, we went to this, it was a smaller boutique place, and we walked in and it was like, oh, these are our people. This is how it's going to be. So
Karen,
we wanted, to have, an egg donor and also a gestational surrogate. So two separate women working with us. So the baby or babies was not the gestational surrogates, biological children. So that is a very specific, expensive, emotional, time consuming journey.
Can I ask you a question? Was it because did you already have an egg donor in mind, or you specifically wanted to keep it so that the surrogate wasn't sort of emotionally maybe involved?
I knew that we would have a relationship with the surrogate because I needed to control her as much as humanly possible. I needed to send someone the Excel spreadsheets of what she can and cannot eat.
Right.
So that was not an option to not know her.
But yes, definitely. We would be remiss if we weren't honest about, we wanted it to be a clean, for lack of a better word, transaction or negotiation in terms of that, because it's already so emotional and it's already so elaborate. It's such a miracle to get an egg donor and a surrogate to get on the same cycle. And then we just learned so much. Your viewers and listeners probably already know this, but I just didn't understand that. Yeah, you're tricking the body into thinking they're pregnant, so it's preparing, and it was a wild thing. So then we began the process of finding an egg donor, and we went through a few different ones.
Well, here's the crazy.
Here's the crazy thing.
When you get a donor, you have to get genetically tested to see any recessive gene that you might have, and
for any kind of abnormality, any disease
that you have as a recessive gene. And Cheyenne had one recessive gene, and I had three recessive genes for rare diseases. The first girl tested positive for the same recessive gene as Cheyenne.
One in 100,000 people
have the gene. So we were like, bummer. She was our girl. Second girl tested positive for the same recessive gene. And we were like, on the day when they told us, I was like, no, you're looking at the first girl. This second girl.
We thought it must be in the wrong file.
Yeah, they're like, no, but she tested positive too. Third girl, her schedule didn't work. And I was like, oh no, girl.
Already.
Sorry about it. I had gone through this, the database, more times than and I was like, she ain't here. She's not in this database. So Cheyenne, one day, I'll say the story correctly because you think I say it wrong.
Literally, I was sitting in the chair and we were kind of just like,
we were really upset one night. Why
do, maybe we should go back to one of those big giant agencies. Maybe there's more, you know, options to choose from. But I literally Googled egg donation and the, and this thing popped up called eggdonation.com. And
it was run by six women.
Yep.
Here in Studio City. So it was like all female. It was like, just felt, and their database was.
Yeah. It, all proven, proven donors who had gotten pregnant before for families. And
no, not pregnant, had eggs.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this one girl popped out immediately.
Her smile,
the first
her
picture
energy.
Of her. Yeah. She was like leaning out the window. And she has this hair and this
Be careful now. you know,
and so we just knew that's going to be our girl. And we read her, you know, you read everything you can. You get as much information as you can. We tried to find video of her talking just to kind of see what her physicality would be. And that was our girl.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the surrogate, usually that's the harder part to find, because that is the obviously the oven, for lack of a better word. It's the main mamma jamma. And we were matched up with somebody and it was a fit right away. She had done it twice.
She had three children of her own and had been a surrogate once before, a year before.
For
twins. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so going in, did you guys know you wanted to have twins?
I did.
So yeah.
I wanted twins. I was like, we're having twins. Because I just always felt, I felt like, okay, we have one. We go through the baby stuff. We got to go back to the beginning.
You sound like my husband. He was like, let's just have twins. Like, one and done.
I just knew. I was like, having a three-year-old, then a one-year-old, which is like what I figured. I was like, that's going to be hard to have a toddler all around. You know, romping around, and then a newborn. And I
did not want twins.
Right.
I didn't not want twins, but I definitely, you know, starting with two, from zero to two, I knew that it was just going to be bonkers. But, you know, what you do is once you finally go through the process of all the hormones and all the, how long was the whole process? 11 months, maybe?
From beginning to end? 15.
Well, for the whole process, finally, when we did it and I lost my train of thought.
Anyway, so what you put in two to get one.
Oh, right, yeah.
You get as many eggs as you can. So I'll be honest, we got 30 eggs. 27 of them were viable.
Wow.
Cheyenne got half and I got half. And then they let them grow for 5 days. And on day six, they implant them.
We picked someone who looked like she could be related to both of us. So,
and on the sixth day, we did, you can pay a little bit more for what they call PGD testing, which tests for all genetic malfunctions, not malfunctions, it's not a car, abnormalities. And you can also get the sex of the kids too, but we did it mainly to make sure that they were healthy embryos, because we actually turned out we had some that were not, I had like three that were not healthy. So we went into it that morning with an idea of, you know, we're going to take the strongest one of his and the strongest one of mine. You can see a picture of the blastocyst and you can, like, I saw this one and we saw that one and they were like, I'm like, these kids are alive. They're hungry. You can see the cells. They're like, the cells were just hungry. I could tell. So we put both of them in.
And the process of doing it is really wild. So our doctor, our surrogate, she was there with her husband and both of us. And then in a room, she's in the bed with
legs up,
you know, covered in a blanket. The doctor, I kid you not, like had Enya music on. It was weirdly romantic,
yeah,
and spiritual and beautiful. And here's me and Jason. So then he goes outside, and a nurse brings in two syringes. And, you know, they have to like obviously keep track of what's what. And then there's a monitor there next to our surrogate. And so we can see, and he just goes inside and places him. And then two little lights, two little blip, blip. And you can see little lights.
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then we were pregnant and we thought that they told us at first it was just one.
Well, it was actually, I got into a little bit of a fight with, woman running our agency because I had just arrived to New York and they test your hormones every other day or like when you're first, but we were first found out we were pregnant, we were like ecstatic. And then, you know, listen, I wanted twins. I wanted, you know, and so they were testing the hormone levels of our surrogate and they're supposed to double every day or every other day. They're supposed to double. And the numbers were high, but they were not where they would normally be, I guess, if you were having twins. So Cheyenne was in New York doing something and I flew to New York to see him. I'm in the cab and we have a conference call with her and she's like, looks like you're having a singleton. And I was like, first off, you're calling it a singleton. Like that's, it's a person, but okay. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean? She's like, you know, you're having one, the numbers, we get the numbers. It looks like you're, and I'm like, wait a minute. What do you mean? Like maybe can the numbers be lower and still have, she's like, well, yes, but probably not. So I was like, I didn't like it. So we got into it about it because she was like, Jason, why don't you just be happy that you're pregnant? Just be happy. And I'm like, hold up, lady, hold up. Okay. I am, I'm not happy that we're pregnant, but I am also dealing with the possibility that we might've lost an embryo. I'm dealing with the fact that like what I wanted might not be happening. So give me a minute. So that was one of our moments that we had. And I was not happy with the conversation. So I called the fertility clinic myself to have my own conversation with the nurse, of which she said, don't worry. She's like, listen, sometimes I've had lower numbers and there's twins and I've had higher numbers and there's a singleton, if you will. So I was like, thank you. So I'm like, we're having twins. Like, I just like, I'm like, they're still there. They were, I remember looking at the picture of the blastocyst. I'm like, they want to be here. These kids are hungry to be here. And I was very glad to be right when I had to tell
Karen. Yes, you were.
I told you.
Karen. Yeah. Karen, if you're listening, you were wonderful and I love you. And
I'd love to tell you about their birth because it was pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So we were, it was in Northern California and she carried them almost all the way to term. I mean, really technically to term.
38 and a half weeks.
And, you know, we were just, we went up there, I guess like what, 2 weeks early?
When she was in labor?
Well, because we were staying at that place.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
She went into early labor and they were kind of trying to stave it off. And so we were around the area.
So we had a little mini pre 10 day stay at the Carmel Valley Ranch. It's delicious and wonderful.
A little baby moon, if you will.
It actually was.
But we were really just preparing ourselves, mentally and emotionally for this. And it was, you know, we had done all the readings and all the books and the nursery was ready. And our sister-in-law, Jason's brother's wife, had just had a baby and she is incredibly generous and beautiful and always breastfeeds and has an excess of breast milk. And so she was freezing breast milk for us.
We bought a special freezer for them and she froze breast milk for 2 months for us.
And also wow. Like wrote little messages on them.
Each bag. She would say, you're strong and beautiful. And
aww.
Yeah, it was
amazing. So we had all the stuff, we were getting ourselves ready, but you know, and I thought that, I don't know, you hear all these stories about when people become parents that you just, it's so dramatic and you're crying. And I was very kind of zen and cool about it. And we came time and we were in the hospital and we were all suited up and in our scrubs and stuff. And then we're in the room. It had to be a C-section because it was high risk. And I was so calm. And then Willow comes out.
Screaming.
Just I remember seeing her just, I could not believe what I was looking at. I mean, her perfect little, but like alien looking face, just perfect little teeny, teeny features. And I just remember tears like shooting out of my eyes and just weeping, because to love something so completely, so instantly, it was so profound and overwhelming. And then a couple minutes later, Ethan comes out. But Ethan was born what they call in call. So he, the sack was,
yeah,
the sack. Whoa.
So the nurses were gathering around and it's supposedly good luck. And it was, so we saw him born before he was even born. He was inside and we saw him.
Wow.
So calm. And the doctor just peeled away. And then the amniotic fluid, you know, drained away. And then he was there. And then they were there. They put him directly on us, on our chests. They both tried to breastfeed right off the bat.
You're like, good luck with that.
And that was it. We were in the hospital for, I guess, about 48 hours because Ethan had jaundice.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, we walked out. We had a baby nurse that was going to help us just get acclimated. And we really wanted to get on a sleep schedule and all that. So she was with us, sat in the back of the car, and we each had a baby. And we're like, now what the fuck do we do?
Yeah.
And we've just been figuring it out ever since.
Oh my god, that's so cool that he was born on call. That's like,
we knew that. I was as obsessed as I am with food now in terms of like healthy this, and that's why I'm crazy and still dealing with it.
Vaginal flora.
Yeah, no, but I had studied, like, I'm curious. I had been following all the birth. Well, I had helped with the birth of my niece. We had a home birth, and like I helped like hold Claudia's legs back. I mean, I was in it. So I just am like very much. I knew like I've learned a lot about birth before the kids, and I knew from a man's, I didn't want to just like leave it up to, I wanted to be very educated about birth. And so, and I had already been educated by birth from just watching birth from being at a home birth and knowing like birth is not always an emergency. It's not. And it's like women have been giving birth to babies in the bush, if you will, for thousands and thousands of years. So I really was committed to, with a C-section, having the most peaceful birth and knowing that the kids would not be able to go through the vaginal canal. I wanted, and that there's a purpose for that, wanted to. So yes, I did know about the vaginal flora.
Yeah.
And I did ask my doctor if we could get some of that, please, and wipe it on their mouth, please.
That's amazing.
There was no vaginal flora, but I, you know, whatever. But
I love that you asked that, because I ended up with two emergency C-sections and had like so many issues with them not going through the canal this stuff. But you know, heart rates kept dropping. They had to come out. They had to come out to be healthy.
Right.
But I did research too. And also hats off to you, because I'm sure that's the second time I've said that phrase during this episode. But I feel like there's so many men out there who are spouses to women who don't learn that much about birth and what is exactly going to happen. So how incredible that you took it upon yourself to really educate yourself what was about to happen.
Thank you.
I also, when you were telling the story about their conception and then their insertion is not the right word, but what is the word I'm looking for?
They were inserted, honey. They were
implantation, maybe? Were they implanted themselves?
Implanted.
It was such an incredible mixture of science and like the magic of life.
Yes.
You know what you were saying, like you were talking about these blastocysts but the way you were describing with them was in such human terms. But when you, like, the picture of a blastocyst is so scientific and not something you would ever, you know, give human characteristic to.
Right.
And just the talk when you were talking about the Enya music being on, I just feel like it was a perfect mixture of both, which is,
it really was all that. And all of it can exist all at the same time.
Yes.
It has to, you know what I mean? Like, science is critical. You know what I mean? We believe science is critical. And without science, we would never have the opportunity to have Ethan and Willow the way we had Ethan and Willow. So, you know, we're very grateful for that. I'm grateful for not only the science, but also like the time that we're in, because I think it was like 5 to 10 years before that, they never allowed embryos to grow more than 2 days. Mm-hmm. So now that they allow them to grow for 5 days outside of the human body, allow them to really mature, to really see how strong they really are. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was so determined to, like, I knew that after on the sixth day, the way they looked as a blastocyst, I'm like, no, they're there.
Those are our babies.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. I'm still amazed that you know about the vaginal canal. I mean,
I studied all about breast milk and the compounds of that. And like, we got the best formula that we could get to supplement. And
well, if we're going to go there, we can talk about vaginas because I have a funny story.
Okay. Let's talk about vaginas.
What do you want to tell the story about?
Oh my God.
Okay. So go ahead. I think
I feel like I'm talking too much.
It's okay. That's the story of our life.
That's right? True. So the kids are born. It was a really hard day. It was a great, incredible day. But we're in a very small town and it was the most intense day of our life. Anyway, so we hadn't slept that night. And the next day, our night nurse had come that was going to be with us. And she came and she's like, listen, why don't you guys go back to the hotel, get some rest. I'll take care of the kids. But you guys have not slept in 2 days. So go. So we're like, oh, you know what? Let's just go. So
she stayed
with them in the hospital. So we went back to the hospital and we go home. We take a shower. We're lying in bed. We're in disbelief. And we're like, you know, like we were in bliss, like of just like, can you believe it? We finally could rest. And we're sitting there and he's like, Cheyenne's holding me and he's like, honey. And I'm like, yeah. We're like dozing off the bed. He's like, I have a confession. I'm like, no, not, this is not the time. What is he going to confess right now? He's like, well, I saw my first vagina today. What? And I was like, he's like, you know, when I called you over to show you Willow, I'm like, yeah. He's like, that was the first time I've ever seen inside of a vagina before. And I was it was like guttural laughter. Oh, but like, it was so funny, but it was like also like so true. Like that really was the first time he had ever.
With the nurse, you know, listen, I'd seen books. I had never been with a woman. So I'd never seen that. I have always known who I was and what I was interested in. And when she was explaining everything and she was changing Willow. I was just fascinated.
It was like he had seen a planet.
Yeah. It was like so much to it. And so I just wanted to admit.
So much to it. I have to tell y'all, there's even more to it. Well, we have, throughout this time, we have been asking people all different kinds of questions. And the one we thought we wanted to hear from you guys after listening to the beginning of the conversation is, what have you learned from your kids?
What have I learned? I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is that I cannot control anything. And that is very hard for me because I want to control. I mean, and I want to control everything, but it's like, I don't want to control everything, but I find myself trying to control. But what I've learned the most is I went into parenting thinking that nurture is more impactful than nature. And I've actually realized like they are who they are by nature more, not to say that nurture doesn't, like the environment and our conversations and the environment we bring them up to is definitely going to impact them for sure. But who they already are is already in place and there's nothing I can do about it. I cannot change them. Like I can't change, you know, there ain't no change in people. As much as I want to change my mom and change Cheyenne half the time and he wants to change me, it's like, and we have all found that we can't. That's the same goes with my kids is it's really more about allowing it to unfold and allowing them to get out of their way is really like, I have to get out of my way to let them get to grow and bloom into who they already are.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's what I.
That was great, babe.
Thanks, man.
I mean, I've learned so many things. I think it really boils down to that I've truly learned to love. I am somebody who is I have trouble expressing my emotions, ironically being an actress, but still, it's intimacy is hard for me. Jason comes from a very kissy, lovey family where everybody's really emotional and it's not, my family wasn't like that. So, kids are so unabashedly loving and they tell you exactly what they want and exactly what they need. And they have forced me to get intimate and both of them do this habit. They both turn our faces. If we are, you know, at first it was just like, I want to be heard, but they really want to be with you. I'm telling you this thing, Dad, and are you with me? And it forces me to be with them and really to be with myself, because I've spent a lot of years trying to run away from emotion and love and intimacy. You can't do that when you have kiddos, and they are so loving and love each other so much and they love us so much, and it's just a big mush fest here. I think that's probably one of the reasons Jason and I started sharing our lives with them, like on social media and not keeping it private, because there's so much love in this house. Sometimes I feel like it's like a Tupperware thing. Like you gotta like let some of it out or it'll explode. Like I need to let some of the share it, because it's amazing. And I think that's what I would say I learned the most.
It's palpable. What you guys put out into the interwebs, the love in your house and your family is palpable. And it has been that way since before you had children too. Yeah. Personally knowing you guys beforehand, seeing you together, I'm so blown away by your connection, your communication, your ease with one another. And it's clearly just making you incredible parents.
Thanks.
And thank you so much for sharing with us and for, you know, sharing your story with our listeners.
To relive.
And I want to say this, which I think is very, very critical, which is, you know, when Cheyenne said there's so much love in the house and so much love, right? And there is so much of what he said, but I want your listeners to know that it doesn't come for free. This love is something that ongoingly we have to put in the work to have the experience of love. And the experience of love is a function of us communicating even when we don't want to.
Yeah.
And staying in it until it's resolved, staying in it until love gets present again, because saying I love you doesn't create love. But when every resentment and every hidden communication and every, you know, and I've had to learn, like, I like to get it resolved right now. And Cheyenne needs to sometimes step away, because I will hunt him down to, like, we're in a fight and he's not ready to talk. I'm like, oh, you know, we are talking right now. And I will follow him into the closet. And I have followed him into a couple closets before. But I've learned to, like, no, he needs his space. He needs to cool down. And he always comes back into being able to finally talk. And that's what he needs. And I've had to learn to let go of what I want when I want it. And he's learned, like, we need to stay in those difficult conversations and stay in it until you know when it's resolved. And you know when it's resolved.
And we're trying to impart that to them, too, because now they're at a point where they're fighting and really, really hurting each other's feelings and really, like, getting some intense emotions. So when they hurt each other, either verbally or physically, saying I'm sorry is not enough.
Right.
We need them both to really mean it, really feel it. They have to hug. They have to mean it. And we all have to all collectively agree that, like, okay, this is good. Now we can move on. Last night we had an incident. Willow was ready to let it go. Ethan was laughing about it. And it, like, kind of belittled her you know, her pain. And so once he got back on board, he had to have a little moment to calm his body down, time out a little bit, and then come back. Then we all knew, okay, now we can move on. So I think that's, so paramount.
And it's easy to just let it go. Like let's move on. Like we're all tired. We're all just want to watch some TV. We all just want to like, and I'm not saying like every single time it has to be perfectly, you know, handled, but if it's, you know, the big stuff and like the bigger moments need to get resolved.
Yeah.
And you're giving them the tools to handle that in their yeah. future relationships. So that's
them watching our love. Mm-hmm. I watched them love watching us kiss and hug each other. It's crazy because I come from a family that my parents got divorced when I was one. So I never experienced my parents together. But I can tell that it does provide something that I never experienced as a kid. I watch them feel secure. I watch them feel happy when Cheyenne and I are physically touching and loving and kissing on each other because they like, I don't know. It just
Willow loves when we kiss.
She pulls
our faces together.
She'll pull it.
Like,
yeah.
Kiss.
Or we'll all four kiss together. Yeah. We'll do family kiss together. And it's just like,
it's the best.
Of course, it's intimacy.
Yeah.
Whereas I would rather, you know, that's I'm like, ugh, just,
yeah, yeah.
No, but they look to you. You're the model. You know, they model who they are based on what they see from you.
Yeah. It's a scary prospect, but it's such a
I know, right?
Beautiful. So true. Yeah. It's so true.
It's such sponges.
Yeah. And on the flip side, I'm willing to fight in front of them too, which is something that Cheyenne and I have had to work on because like,
I'm not,
I want them to see the real thing. I want them to like, life is not perfect, you know, like, and yet I have to be careful with that myself. I have to be more mindful. Not that we don't want we can do some little arguments here and there, but the bigger fights that we have, Cheyenne's very good at it, but I need to practice pausing. Doesn't have to get resolved right now. We'll deal with it later.
But also it's important for them to know that it's not all rosy.
Rosy.
And are times where you have to. So, you know, finding that balance and riding the line of, and because then that gives them the tools as they move through life in order to sit with
them. I want them to watch it resolve something. I want them to see the beginning, middle, and end of a conversation and like, I apologize or he apologizes.
Guys, this was awesome. I feel like we could keep chatting and like,
I know.
There's all kinds of things to just talk about and unpack, but thank you for sharing the story of their birth and thank you for sharing just your journey with us. I loved hearing it. I mean, as someone who's just meeting y'all today.
Thank you, Jessica and Kara. I mean, just so great to be reconnected and thank you for like having this conversation be a real one.
Of course. Thank you. You said something at the beginning, Kara, that this isn't something that people ask us a lot. Usually it's about, what show are we in? What's our next thing?
How are you surviving the pandemic?
You know,
we're like the same like you.
It's nice to go. It feels good to remember, you know, why we made this decision and why we're doing it.
Yeah.
Because it's, and now we're all about to go do it again.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and of course, subscribe and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold.
We'll be right back.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.